Hello, Ira. Hello. Unfortunately, we seem to have a slight challenge with Ira Adam Karim's line. We will wrap up at this point. George Adu Jr. is standing by to bring us the locker room, or to take us into the locker room, if I can say. George, first of all, congratulations once again on that sixth NSMQ trophy annexed by Presbyterian Boys Senior High School in Legon.
Yeah, thank you very much. We've actually stopped talking about six. We are preparing to win seven. But thank you so much, the whole of Ghana, for believing in us once again and knowing that we are the torchbearers. Thank you.
Second question. Ghana has been walloped 3-0 by Mali.
Yes, please.
At the Emir Hotel Sports Complex, Antalya, Turkey. Yes. This is the friendly match everyone
the friendly match going. It just ended. It just ended, actually.
And they beat us 3-0.
So guess what? Our first discussion here on the locker room is to find out from the guys what their observations are. This is CK's first job since he took over as Black Stars coach. And he's lost by 3 goals today.
Did Partey play?
Partey played.
Partey played?
All your players that you expect him
after
to play.
After the Partey we held for him this week.
But this is not us now, please. This is Black Stars.
Hey. Yeah, okay, stay tuned for the locker room.
There's a lot to come. We'll talk about the NBA, you know, finals later tonight. The LA Lakers may just win it. You
they
know,
will,
right?
They will win the French thing. Open. There are two games up.
French, yes, of course. Mm. One game away, in fact, because it's 3-1 in the
yeah, it is 3-1 in there.
So once they hit 4-1, they're done. And of course, there's French Open to talk about as well. We've got the finals looking really, really good with that 19-year-old hoping to win her first Grand Slam. And what else? We've got a lot of football, plus what's happening elsewhere in Europe.
All right. So you don't want to miss the locker room coming up next with George Adu Jr. My name is Daniel Dazid. Many thanks to Manuel Kranting for the production assistants and everyone else. Have a good evening.
And I say keep on listening to George. 99.7 FM.
For all your sports news in the locker room.
Hello, I'm Lee James, host of Sports World on the BBC World Service. For the best of previews to the sporting weekend, listen to George Addo Jr. on the locker room on Joy 99.7 FM.
Live on radio, live online. This is the locker room on Joy 99.7 FM with George Adu Jr.
Tennis is top of the weekend sporting agenda as the final Grand Slam of the year culminates with so much talk about the male and female singles finals.
That's been the story of my career. It is what it is. I took a year and a half off for a baby. So I don't know. It's like I'll never be satisfied until I retire.
Djokovic, what a great point to win it.
Djokovic.
And Novak Djokovic is a winner once again.
7-5, 6-3.
It's his first.
Can into the net.
Djokovic.
Astonishing performance once again from Iga Swiatek, who doesn't seem to mind at all that she's only 19. A first Grand Slam final for her.
After 12 days of action in Paris and the exit of many top stars in the competition, it's time to crown the most deserving tennis players in France. It's Sofia Kenin up against the Poland teenager Iga Świątek in the final. The male final pairing will be complete soon and will be in France to bring you analysis ahead of both finals. There's basketball as well on the menu as we head into Game 5 of the 2020 NBA Final Series.
Down 0-2, being dominated. Most people talking about it looks like it's going to be a sweep. But they're saying we are not done yet. It'll be a 24-second violation. Morris inbounds to Caruso. And letting for three. In and out, won't go. The tip misses. The second tip from Hayward is good. We'll get it to Butler. And Butler is fouled with one point. Ball deflected. And that's it. The Miami Heat take a commanding 3-1 lead.
The LA Lakers can wrap up the 2020 NBA title tonight if they can better their 3-1 lead in the clash against the Miami Heat. We're on the Bubble in Disney World to preview the Game 5. Also coming up.
And it's lights out and away we go. So Hamilton gets away well, as does Max Verstappen this week, but Valtteri Bottas is already ahead of him, and Daniel Ricciardo slots in the fourth, and Esteban Ocon has made up places from the start as well. It's a long run down towards turn two, plenty of time to sort themselves out. Bottas is going round the outside of Lewis Hamilton, but he has to go wide, and it's the Red Bull. The only man to be on the podium in the last three Russian Grand Prix. He's on the podium this afternoon, and it's the top step of the podium as Valtteri Bottas wins the Russian Grand Prix.
Formula One, and we're in Germany for the Eiffel Grand Prix. It will be the second chance Lewis Hamilton gets to equal Michael Schumacher's win record, and there's arguably no better place to do it than at the seven-time champion's home ground. Analysis ahead. International football replaces club football, and there are friendlies and scattered organized confederation games to look forward to tonight. If you'd love to send us a message, we'd love to read them via social media accounts, joy/99.7, 0551-111-997 on WhatsApp, or tweet at us at joysportsgh. We'll be in the US to preview Emmanuel Navarrete's attempt to become a two-weight world champion as he challenges for the vacant WBO featherweight title left behind by Shakur Stevenson. And in Poland for the World Half Marathon. It's time to talk about what the world is talking about in the world of sports. Hello from me, George Adder Jr., and welcome.
And a great good evening to you wherever you find yourself. Well, yes, it's now time to get into the analysis that we've got. There's a lot of tennis to come. Yes, I told you, we have an idea of what the female singles finals is looking like there. Yeah, Iga Świątek is actually hoping to win and beat Sofia Kenin. But for the male division, Rafa Nadal has just defeated Diego Schwartzman in three sets to move on. Anyway, the third set, he had to do it over a tiebreaker, but it's all good. Novak Djokovic as well is going so strong at the moment, is leading by two sets against Stefanos Tsitsipas. It looks like it's going to be Rafa Nadal up against Novak Djokovic on Sunday for the French Open final. A big opportunity for Novak to get his 18th Grand Slam title and for Rafa Nadal to equal that record that Roger Federer has of 20 Grand Slam titles. We'll be looking forward to all of that. We'll be talking a little bit about that. There's NBA to come. There is a lot of football to come, but we really need to start with what we just saw. The Black Stars are preparing for the Africa Cup of Nations qualifiers, and you know the Ghana has a date with Sudan later. Well, in trying to do that, there was a game against Mali, the first of two friendlies to come in a few days, and yeah, Ghana lost there by 3-0. We're going into a bit of analysis right now with what we just saw. Okay, guys, you know what? After the game, I posted on my Facebook page. In 6 minutes, I had over 100 comments. I'm yet to find out what's next there. I don't know how I can read 100 comments. We're going to be doing this for 15 minutes. But I tell you that FanZone is going to take this up strongly. And I've got the host of FanZone here with me, Hans Mensah Addo. Hans, how are you doing?
Hey, George, I'm dreading.
I'm sure you are going through your notes in what's going to happen on your show later tonight.
I'm dreading the amount of phone calls and messages that are going to come through tonight,
yes,
on the show.
Obviously, Hans joins me. He's going to be telling me about what he saw. We'll hear from Hans later when we get to the Navarrete in a Rubin Villa fight. It's interesting. Michael as well has been watching the game. We'll hear from him what he made of, you know, CK's first attempt to try and grab all of this. We'll be on the Sports Link as well to talk about it tomorrow. And I think on the Sports Review as well. It's big meat for discussion this weekend. Hans, so let me start with you. I think along the line we'll be joined by Rick Wampoff as well. But Hans, let me start with you. 3-0. What were your expectations first going into this game?
Well, I mean, I think my expectations were modest. You know, I kept it quite low because it's the first time that Sihia Kono is taking charge of the team. Mm-hmm. Again, we're going to see a lot of new faces around the team as well. And so, you know, I didn't expect a high-level performance. When you've got that many new players in the team, that many young players, you know, getting into the team for the first time, you know, you can't expect too much. So, yes, I mean, modest mm-hmm. expectation. I didn't expect free-flowing football because, you know, those are the team that has had the time to build cohesion,
yes, right.
You know. But what I felt that they were going to lack in cohesion, I expected them to make up for adequately in their work ethic, you know, or how much work they put in, how much shift they put in on the night. Unfortunately, we didn't see that. We didn't see the team create a lot of chances, which is understandable because they are not playing... they don't know themselves that much,
right.
You know. The cohesion is not there. You need to be able to know yourself and be creative to be able to break down defenses, such as the sort of mean defense that Mali, you know, put up on the day. So that was understandable. But what we did not see in cohesion, creativity, we also didn't see it in hard work. It simply was not there. The work rate was just not good enough. There was an aura of arrogance about the team. Well, we are the Black Stars. I mean,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
We've got Andre Didier, we've got Jordan Ayew, we've got
Thomas Partey,
you know, who's just signed for us now. And the Malians were all business, were all hard work, and crucially, they took their chances.
Let me do a few of the messages that have come through right now. And some of you have messages that has a lot of sarcasm right in them, a lot of sarcasm there. Okay, so let me just do this right now. Now, this is coming in from Beneza Ato. He says, fantastic performance. Well done, Kotoko Rejector coach. And Ghana's Hope Dede, I salute you, okay? What a Kotoko style of play. I don't know who else is coming. It's just concert party of the day. This is full of sarcasm, is it? Now, Kofi Chum says that this team can't win a cup for Ghana. Isn't it too early to start talking about that anyway? Undedicated performance from all players. Partey had only one shot. Attackers were poor. The keeper, this should be his last time in the goalpost. All 50-50 balls were won by the Malians. The left back was bad. Wow. Now, Wiz Bowie says, well, it's a friendly game and our boys look absolutely rusty. So it's a deserved and fair result for you. Shakur Issa Fabio says, he really has a lot of work to do. No game plan. Can't hold the ball, you know, for 2 good minutes. Couldn't win tackles. The midfield of Ghana Black Stars generation after generation has been fantastic, and it appears that Kuno wants to build this tactic system, you know, on the laterals and wings, which can help Ghana at all. That's what you're saying. Carl Binya says, we could have offered Legon Botanical Gardens to them to play if we knew this is what they were going to do. Aye, Charlie. This is truly Black Stars. So, these boys have not met. They haven't done. Hi. Now, Dan Lancelot, someone says, I think the T's in CK's letter are being crossed and the I's are being dotted. The Malians were just goal shy. They could have scored more goals. That's even what you're saying.
Goal shy.
Yeah, said we're goal shy. So, they could have even scored more goals if they wanted to. I'll have some response. Formation was very poor. We appeared, you know, scared in the match. The formation outweighed ours. Mohammed Hadi Olumbe says, how can you bring back the love when you are playing like JHS students? Aish! And as Kobnor being Yaku says, well done, Black Stars. We ended up like Chelsea when they wore their new jersey. Adomba Ike Ima says, so CK wants to tell Ghanaians that the goalkeeper is better than Kotoko and housekeepers. Very weak team. Zero dedication. And there's one thing that's running through. I've seen a number of people talking about dedication to the game. And Hans, I don't know if it's because we normally expect a rush of blood, a bit of adrenaline, you know, rush when there's a new coach and everybody wants to impress the coach.
Yeah.
It looked like things were not exactly what we expected.
So I think it's just reflective of the outcome of the game because you've got more experienced players. I don't want to use the word older players, but, you know, established stars, if you like, in the team who didn't, I think in my opinion, didn't see the need to do anything extraordinary because, I mean, their places in the team is already cemented.
Right.
And then you had new players who would be, so I'm sure they'll be surprised at the level of quality that they saw in the Malians. It was a case of welcome to the big time. This is international football, you know, because I don't think that Kamaldi knew what to expect going into this game. He hasn't played at this level before. You understand me? It's one thing playing at a youth level. When you step up to the senior national team, you are going to play against established, you know, internationals.
Yeah, lessons like Jiku and they were
surprised by the quality that they saw. And so if you've got young players who are coming through and not really stepping up to the plate, and existing players who don't see the need to really break their backs to impress the new coach, the result is what we got.
Hans, just a final question, and then you take it up there clearly, because I'll be moving on to the other topics. Hans, just the final one. So how do we handle this? It's Siki's first game. He's not really been in camp with the boys so much. I mean, how do we take this forward, and why should we be worried and not be too worried?
Well, I mean, I don't think we have to take stock of the individual performances. Yeah. If there is anything to worry about, it has to come from the output of the individual players. Did they have an off day? Were they simply poor? What was their form coming into this game? I think that would also be a factor. And then, secondly, not press the panic button. I think that is important.
It's important.
To be fair to see here,
it's just a wake up call he needed.
Exactly.
You know that there's work to be done.
He knows. I think that this is not indicative of the team so much as it is about how much work that he's got to do. When he has the remaining component, I'm talking about the core of the team back.
Yeah.
You know, we'll get a better picture of how well, or you know, the team will play, or where the team are exactly. Because I think that Mubarak Wakasu walks straight into the starting 11 of the Black Stars. I'm not sure about Jonathan Mensah, but he's one of the experienced players. There are quite a number of players who can, you know, easily walk into the starting. Mohamed Kudus is one of our hottest properties wasn't in this team. So yes, let's not press the panic button yet. We'll do all the analysis.
But the warning is clear.
The warning is there. I think what, and like I said, this shows just how much work CK Akona has got to do. If older experienced players are not performing on the first assignment of the coach, if they don't see the need to impress the coach, then that is worrying. You know, because it sends a certain message to the players, the new players who are coming in, that I probably don't need to do too much to remain in this team. This is the standard that existing players are playing. I probably don't need to do, you know, break my back. I probably don't need to show any extraordinary level of commitment to be able to get into the team. But I think the older players are supposed to be sending a message to the new players. Because look, they are coming for your positions.
That's right.
And that is a reality. You look at the performance of Mohamed Kudus, and anybody within that midfield, that central midfield of the Black Stars, has to be looking over his shoulders. If you get a jersey and you don't perform, a young player is coming for your jersey. And I'm praying and hoping that some of these calls, CK Akono is going to be bold enough to make some of these calls. In any case, the team is in transition. Black Stars team is changing. We are seeing Christian Atu not in the team. If he gets a club in Europe and he starts performing, he's likely to get back into the team. How old is he? How old is Andre Dede Ayew? You know, they've got at best 4 years for the Black Stars. By the next 4 years, we should be phasing them out. And that probably is also the problem. We need to be forward thinking. CK has to be forward thinking. Don't panic. Stick to your plan. And I'm talking the long-term plan, you know, of getting Ghana into the World Cup, maybe win the 2021 AFCON, and make the tough decisions. He has to be able to make the tough decisions.
That's a key thing.
The older players who do not perform,
put them
aside. Give the younger ones an opportunity. The likes of Kudus and Kamaldin have shown that if you are good enough, you are old enough. And that, for me, has to be the policy of CK Akono.
There's definitely more to come, you know, on football. Hans is going to stay with me as we quickly go into boxing. More football to come. Hans did mention, in fact, about Christian Atu and all of that. There's some news on Christian Atu from John Bennett when he joins us with the BBC series. But now Hans sticks with me as we do the boxing.
This Friday will not disappoint. It is for the vacant WBO featherweight title. Emmanuel Vaquero Navarrete, 32-1 with 28 knockouts, taking on Ruben the Drac Villa the Fourth, 18-0, 5 knockouts. As always, this is boxing. This is Top Rank. It goes down Friday, October 9th. 4:15 are the undercards on ESPN+. 7 o'clock on ESPN, the network. It is Navarrete Villa for the vacant WBO featherweight title, Friday, October 9th. As always, this is boxing. This is Top Rank.
Mexican puncher Emmanuel Navarrete will attempt to become a two-weight world champion as he challenges for the vacant WBO featherweight title left behind by Shakur Stevenson. Opposing Navarrete will be California's Ruben Villa, who has fought nowhere near world level but is unbeaten and ends his shot following a spell as WBO international champion. Navarrete moves up to featherweight after five successful defenses of his WBO belt at the super bantamweight, although he did make a feather debut that was struck from the records back in June. So let's get some perspective ahead of the bout. Navarrete will be hoping satisfies his dream of adding a world title in a second weight to his collection. Let's get some analysis right now. Joining me is my colleague Hans Mensah. And Hans, thank you very much for your time on the show. Yeah, no Ghanaians involved here, but we're very much aware of the exploits of a man who handed Isaac Dugwe a boxing lesson. Navarrete has moved up featherweight. How comfortable would he be?
Well, George, the name Emmanuel Navarrete has become synonymous with Ghana boxing because of those two defeats he handed to Isaac Dugwe. And since then, since the second fight, or maybe even the first fight, he hasn't looked back. Now, he's over the last 1 year fought six times, and all of them have ended in stoppage. Navarrete is moving up in weight to the featherweight ranks. So he's looking to capture a second world title in as many divisions. So it's just, you know, put into perspective the contrasting fortunes of Dugwe and Navarrete after those two fights, doesn't it? In terms of how comfortable he's going to be, I tell you what, he's going to be very, very comfortable. Navarrete was a huge super bantamweight. We saw the size disparity between himself and Isaac Dugwe in those two fights. And he's going to be a huge featherweight. He makes the featherweight quite easily. You know, he has no issues whatsoever making the featherweight limit, but he's going to come in quite bigger than his opponent. The much talked about reach advantage he's had over several opponents is still going to be there against Ruben Villa, and you expect him to use it. So the question a lot of people are asking ahead of this fight is whether Ruben Villa will be able to succeed where six others have failed.
What do we know of the challenger Ruben Villa then?
So Ruben Villa, very accomplished amateur. You know, what people point to is his amateur fight against Shakur Stevenson. Now Shakur Stevenson is one of the hottest young boxers today. He's destined for greatness. Look, if you mention the top five young boxers today, Shakur Stevenson is one of them, alongside Gervonta Davis, alongside Devin Haney. These are the boys who are making boxing thick currently. So people point to his exploit against Shakur Stevenson, and the report is that he gave Shakur Stevenson a run for his money in the amateur ranks. He is the one person who was beating Shakur Stevenson in the amateur ranks. Never mind that Shakur was able to get victory against him in the United States Olympic trials. But if you look at the head-to-head record in the amateur ranks between Shakur Stevenson and Ruben Villa, Villa is actually on top. And that is what people point to and make the point that he is a very, very good boxer. 18 fights, no defeat, but he's got only five knockouts to his name. And this is what people point to as far as this fight against Navarrete is concerned.
Well, Hans, how is this question, of course, ahead of bouts? Where will this be won or lost? And of course, you have to add your predictions.
A lot of people, and I share in that opinion, don't see Ruben Villa winning on the scorecards against Emmanuel Navarrete, primarily because Navarrete, with his long reach, is going to be fighting from a distance. He's a pressure fighter. He won't get too close for Villa to be able to land punches, but he's going to be scoring punches with his long reach. If he cannot knock out Emmanuel Navarrete, as his knockout ratio suggests, 5 from 18 fights, then he doesn't stand a chance of winning against Emmanuel Navarrete. So I don't see Ruben Villa as good as he seems to be, and I've watched him. He's a decent boxer. You know, he knows the ring quite well. He knows what he's doing inside the ring. But it comes down to the physical attribute of the two boxers in Navarrete and Ruben Villa. It's simple. Navarrete has a size advantage. He has a reach advantage. He's used it in the last 1 year. He used it in those two fights against Isaac Dugwe. He's not going to change. For Emmanuel Navarrete, it's as if when he starts punching, his heart is going to stop. You know, he's such a pressure fighter, it makes it difficult for you to think. He doesn't stop throwing punches, and that is where the difficulty is going to be for Ruben Villa. Will he be able to counter what is thrown at him. Guess what also? Look, Dogbe was is much of a hard hitter than Ruben Villa, and yet he couldn't score a knockout against Emmanuel Navarrete. Navarrete virtually walked through the punches of Isaac Dogbe. And so, you know, as far as the physical strength goes, you've got Navarrete ahead of this one. And I think that after the contest, it's Emmanuel Navarrete, 2 years on after beating Isaac Dogbe to win the bantamweight title, will be a two-division world champion.
Yeah, Franz Mensah under there with analysis, so we look forward to that. Of course, next week we'll get Hans back on. There are big bouts to come, and there's so much to talk about. Let's move away from boxing now and talk some tennis. I was just telling you about what the male final is looking like right now. For a fact, Rafa Nadal has already beaten Diego Schwartzman in three sets, 6-3, 6-3, 7-6. At the moment, Novak Djokovic has got a bit of work to do at the moment, because he's leading by 2-1. Tsitsipas has managed to win the third set. So 6-3, 6-2, 7-5. They're now in the fourth set, and I'm sure Tsitsipas is hoping that he can at least win the fourth set and run this back to the fifth set. So much to come there in tennis. That's what the male division is looking like. It's all set, though, for the female division, and I've been speaking definitely, and we've been having a great chat about that. Good time to get into the analysis of the French Open final, especially for the female division tomorrow.
Live on radio, live online, this is The Locker Room with George Addo Jr.
That's been the story of my career. It is what it is. I took a year and a half off for a baby. So I don't know. It's like I'll never be satisfied until I retire.
What a great point to win it.
Djokovic
is winning once again.
7-5, 6-3.
It's his first
can into the net. Astonishing performance once again from Iga Swiatek, who doesn't seem to mind at all that she's only 19. A first Grand Slam final for her.
And the French Open women's final will be contested between Australian Open winner Sofia Kenin and the Polish teenager Iga Swiatek. After two contrasting displays in the semi-finals, the 19-year-old Swiatek needed only 70 minutes to beat Argentine Nadia Podoroska 6-2, 6-1 to reach a first major final. American Kenin overcame the Czech 7th seed Petra Kvitova 6-4, 7-5. 4th seed Kenin produced controlled tennis but had to save 10 break points against the two-time Wimbledon winner. She has yet to play Swiatek on a main tour but faced each other on the same stage in juniors 4 years ago. So ahead of the female singles finals tomorrow, let's get some perspective. And we've been joined right now by the BBC's tennis commentator Russell Fuller and British player Naomi Brody, who is part of the commentary team at Roland Garros. First, Russell, let's start with you. Were you surprised it turned out to be one-sided?
No, not really. Nadia Podoroska's been amazing, a revelation at Roland Garros, not just in the main draw but in qualifying as well. But the way that Iga Swiatek has been playing throughout the 12 days so far has been staggering, and she's proven that she can beat the very best in the world in Simona Halep, and she'd also proved in the quarterfinal that when she's expected to win, as she was when she played qualifier Martina Trevisan, she's very able to deal with that situation too. And her power was again very, very impressive. She is just not making very many errors at all and just seems to be born for the occasion. We've said that about one or two players in recent years on the women's tour. Bianca Andreescu springs to mind, so too does Naomi Osaka. And Swiatek, without dropping a set, is into her first Grand Slam final.
And Naomi, it's been incredible for Swiatek from her junior days, hasn't it?
It absolutely has, and she's only 19, so she's not long out of juniors. As Russell said, it's just incredible to see these young players coming through and dominating the women's tour so early already. And she's got such a fantastic personality off the court as well. She's just lovely to listen to in her interviews. And we saw after her match point today, she was really trying to have a lot of fun with the crowd and, you know, telling them, "I can't hear you, who wants the ball?" and trying to hit it out to them and stuff. So she's just great fun, and her level today was just incredible. Impressive.
Yeah, she will play Sofia Kenin, who beat Petra Kvitova in the final. Let's hear from Kenin now.
I've done it in Australia, so I've had really tough matches this past 2 weeks, so I'm just so excited to be in the finals, and I think it's just incredible, and I'm just going to enjoy this moment today and start getting ready for the final tomorrow.
Russell, you watched the game. Was it Kenin on good form or Kvitova out of form?
She was off form for the first four games, which Kenin won all of, and that may well be nerves. Petra Kvitova said before her quarterfinal that she didn't really want to talk, eat, move, or play, but she knew things would get easier once she got onto court, and she certainly loosened up as we got into the match. It was a windy day, which would be not to Petra Kvitova's advantage, being a player who likes to really go for her shots. You'd really want to try and exclude the elements if you possibly can. After that, though, she played well, some very powerful, aggressive winners. But what was most impressive about Sofia Kenin was just her resilience. She saved a lot of break points. She did stumble a little bit towards the end. She served for the match and she was broken and she looked very nervous as she finally held her serve. But take nothing away from her. This is a player who only won her first Grand Slam in Melbourne in January. And having reached the fourth round of the US Open, here she is in the French Open final too. What a year.
Yeah, Russell, I know she comes across as she had to fight so hard to be in the final, certainly before facing Petra Kvitova anyway. Well, Naomi, in terms of personalities, it's quite a contrast as well.
Absolutely, and it's going to be a fantastic final. I just hope that the match lives up to its potential because it's definitely too close to call at the moment. And as Kenin said there after her match, they played each other in juniors at Roland Garros here, and I think she said Swiatek was the one to come out on top there, but she's the one going in with the experience as a Grand Slam winner. And this is new waters for Swiatek, but it's definitely too close to call.
But that is quite a position for Iga Swiatek to be in. She's 54 in the world, remember. She's not been in this position before, but yet both Naomi and I think she has at least a 50-50 chance.
Thanks to British player Naomi Brady and the BBC tennis commentator Russell Fuller. We look forward to the male final as well.
And we're keeping close tabs on it. As you know, remember you can send us your messages on our WhatsApp line 0551 111 997. You're still on the locker room on Joy 99.7 FM. International break means that there's so much football to savour when it comes to the qualifiers, when it comes to World Cup qualifiers in South America, when it comes to European games, friendlies and more. I can see more of your messages coming up. Of course, I've seen that. Yes, you're sending us your messages and you're still talking about Sikia Kono and the boys and what they did. There's definitely more football to come. Right now, though, it's a quick time to get into Formula One.
It's lights out and away we go. So Hamilton gets away well, as does Max Verstappen this week. But Valtteri Bottas is already ahead of him. And Danny Ricciardo slots in the fourth. And Esteban Ocon has made up places from the start as well. It's a long run down towards turn two. Plenty of time to sort themselves out. Bottas is going round the outside of Lewis Hamilton. But he has to go wide and that's the red. The only man to be on the podium in the last three Russian Grand Prix is on the podium this afternoon, and it's the top step of the podium as Valtteri Bottas wins the Russian Grand Prix. He now starts to close the gap in the championship to his teammate. Max Verstappen finishes second for Red Bull, and another super drive from him. And for Lewis Hamilton, third place. It's a podium, not the record-equaling win that he would have hoped for when he started from pole. Bottas, Verstappen, Hamilton.
7 years after Formula One last visited the Nürburgring, the series returns to the historic venue for the Eiffel Grand Prix. 2013 marked the last time the venue hosted the race, part of its deal to alternate the German Grand Prix with Hockenheim. Sebastian Vettel, of course, was a victor on that day, if you do remember. So this will be a second chance Lewis Hamilton gets to equal Michael Schumacher's win record, and there's arguably no better place to do so than at the seven-time champion's home ground. Now, Lewis Hamilton heads into the race after an off weekend in Russia where Mercedes teammate Valtteri Bottas took the top step after pre-race penalties left Hamilton third. Max Verstappen was the one who benefited, recording another podium finish to split the Mercedes, while the battle in midfield took another twist with McLaren failing to score. So, what kind of race should we expect? And we will begin the analysis definitely by reflecting on the last time out in Sochi. Joining me now with some analysis, Formula One commentators Julian Palmer and Jack Nicholls, as well as our in-house expert Raymond Nyamado. Thanks, guys, for your time. Let me start with you, Jack, and from Sochi. And driving in the race was not plain sailing for Lewis Hamilton. So, did Bottas impress you with the win?
I can't say not very, because he's won a Grand Prix, and he wasn't bad by any stretch of the imagination, of course, but it's a straightforward win, isn't it? And he finishes 7 seconds ahead of Max Verstappen in the Red Bull. He was never under pressure at any point, so there's not really a huge amount to sort of praise Bottas for. Initially, we thought he was very impressive on the run down to turn two, at the start of the Grand Prix, because he really sent it to the outside of Hamilton, but then he revealed that that was an accident. He missed his braking spot because he got hit by a bee and on the visor, which, you know, not ideal, and I'm not criticising him for that, but he didn't want to try and overtake Hamilton. That's the thing I don't get with Bottas, is he infers that he was hit by this bee, so he ended up having to try and overtake Hamilton. He didn't want, like, his plan wasn't to try and overtake Hamilton then. Yeah, that's the weird inference I get from that is, oh, I didn't mean to outbrake Hamilton at turn two. Well, then why didn't you? You had the run, you had the what was the target going to be? But, you know, good drive from Bottas. He won by 7 seconds. He did all that he could do today, to be fair. He maximised his results and he chips away 11 points at the championship lead.
Well, Julian, I know you are a known critic of Valtteri Bottas. Did his performance surprise you in any way?
Well, I actually really liked when he said it before in Australia. And look, potentially before in Australia, I was again a bit of a critic. But who wasn't at the end of his 2018 season? Because his 2018 season was, he finished fifth in the driver's standings. Hamilton won at a canter, and Bottas had a really mediocre season in 2018. The critics, there were many that were saying, look, he's being blown away by Hamilton every weekend. He turned up in Australia last year, he won the race, and he said that message, and I thought, brilliant. This is where Bottas 2.0 came from. You thought, right.
In a fair fight with Hamilton.
In a what appeared to be a fair fight with Hamilton. Turned out, I think, that Hamilton had a bit of floor damage, but it appeared to be a fair fight, and he drove away, and he said that radio message, and I thought, wow, this guy has had a winter of soul-searching. He's turned up to Australia a new man. Bottas 2.0 was born, and I thought, great, he's got fight in him this year, and that's what I want to see. This year, he's not shown the fight on the track. He did accidentally show the fight down at turn two, but the radio message seems a bit... it's a bit over the top, isn't it?
Jack, we know the FIA has rescinded the two penalty points it issued to Lewis Hamilton at the Russian Grand Prix, clearly moving the world champion away from the brink of the one race ban. Hamilton was handed two separate 5-second penalties for an incident ahead of the race where he conducted practice starts away from the area designated to do so.
Lewis, we have a 10-second time penalty for those start infringements.
What happened?
Sorry, Lewis. So, yes, those starts going to the grid got a 5-second penalty for each out of position.
Yeah. Where is that in the rule book?
So, that was Pete Bennington speaking on the radio with Lewis Hamilton. Amazing it has been rescinded. But it was pretty clear in the racing books, right, Jack?
Article 19.2 of the race director's notes specifically. You're not allowed to. It's one of those where I wasn't really aware of it as a rule because I'm never really analysing people's practice starts or where they do them, or it's just an irrelevance because it's all the drivers know the rules, so that's where they do their practice start. So I kind of wasn't even aware that it was illegal. So when he did it and he was under investigation, you're suddenly like, oh, okay, what are the rules? And obviously Jolyon instantly was like, well, no, you do your practice start in the practice start box. That's just where you do it. And then time penalty given, there we go. It's quite a big error, actually, from Mercedes and from Hamilton. Where the pit lane closing in Monza was kind of a tight one, you know, it had just closed, they didn't spot it had closed, okay, fine. It's quite different to this kind of premeditated decision to do something that they should have known.
Well, Julian, to make the mistake twice was an interesting one. I know there are many people working for Mercedes. No one recognised that fact. Is the onus of the driver to know what is right or really on the team?
I put the onus of reading the rules, making sure that the rules are followed. I mean, to be fair, why shouldn't the driver do it? But it's on the team, fundamentally. And Lewis did ask Pete Bonington if he could do that, and Pete Bonington gave the affirm message, yes, you can, that he shouldn't have done. And that was the error, I think, mainly for Pete Bonington in this case. You can't do it. No one else did it. I don't think anyone else was asking to do it, but Lewis was trying to just do something a bit different once again. He does flirt with the rules in many cases. This time he basically broke it. I think it's mainly on the team, but Lewis was the only one to ask that question, really, I think, which put the team in a hard position.
All right, Julian Palmer, you're a proper Formula One driver, of course, with your fantastic days in the sport. I just want to know, was Germany the coldest of places for you?
Surely it's got to be Snetterton at some point.
Nah, I've done a winter series race at Snetterton in sort of end of November time, and that must be up there. I've driven
in like icy conditions at Snetterton also, but not raced in them. That was like winter testing. Interesting weekend at Nürburgring, just because the weather is, the tyres won't work. It's a kind of a good old school track. It's gonna be fun to watch, I think.
All right, let's bring in our in-house expert then, Raymond Yamadou. You predicted the last race wasn't going to be the record-equaling Grand Prix there for Hamilton. Will this be, and you may want to end with your predictions for the Eiffel race?
I still think that the only way to stop Lewis Hamilton is to make sure he gets those penalties. And if Lewis Hamilton doesn't self-destruct in races, definitely his good value to actually win in every race that he competes in this season. And so I'm expecting him to do well at the Nürburgring. He didn't fare too well in his last race in 2013. And I think that was the last time we saw a race at the Nürburgring. And it was Sebastian Vettel who actually topped the charts. Kimi Raikkonen came in second and Grosjean also came in third. And so I'm expecting Lewis Hamilton, who finished fifth in that particular race, to come good this time around. And so everything points to a Lewis Hamilton victory this weekend, despite the fact that Mercedes reported an incident of COVID-19. I still think that the camp should be calm. The camp should be focused on this race. And there's a bit of talk about the weather in Eiffel at the moment. It's pretty cold. It's extremely cold in there. And the connoisseurs are actually predicting a very, very cold race, one that would be very cold, that can actually be one that many would say in recent times has been the coldest in Formula One history. And so I think that a lot of dynamics could play out. Depending on how the weather goes, it could actually have an impact on the results as well. And so we are expecting to have a very good race in Germany. But I think that my money is definitely going to be on Lewis Hamilton this time around. I'm expecting him to go out there and perform. Valtteri Bottas has been able to, you know, close the gap on Lewis Hamilton, reduce his championship lead to 44, but I'm expecting him to also put in a stiff competition in there. I'm expecting the usual candidates in there, Max Verstappen as usual, to also come in there with a shout. The mid-table race, you know, we'll see Racing Point and the likes also try to do their own thing in there, but I still think that I'm not going to give Ferrari any chance in this race because they haven't really fared too well in the course of the season, despite the fact that Vettel has experience on that circuit. I still don't fancy Ferrari winning this or, you know, managing a podium finish, so I'll still go for Lewis Hamilton winning this race. Valtteri Bottas may come in second, and definitely Red Bull should have Max Verstappen also finish with a good position in this race. So I think Lewis Hamilton would be able to equal Michael Schumacher's record this weekend.
Raymond Yamada there with analysis, and we look forward to the Eiffel Grand Prix inside Germany. That should be a lot there as well. We'll be keeping our tabs on the viewing parties down here in Ghana as they continue to do their wonderful job. The Formula One viewing party definitely happening across the length and breadth of the country. So much to look forward to then. All right, now let's talk about the NBA.
It's a toss-up when getting the finals. You know, we're not backing down from anybody, and that's what I like about this team.
Well, congratulations to you. I know that trophy's going to get a lot of love tonight. Congratulations to all you guys. You earned this one the hard way. Headed to the NBA Finals, your Eastern Conference champion, Miami Heat.
But we understand that we got bigger fish to fry. We understand there's a bigger goal. But we can't take this for granted because this doesn't happen every year to anybody.
Congratulations, LeBron. Enjoy your fun night, everybody. Your Western Conference champions, Los Angeles Lakers.
Dominated. Most people talking about it looks like it's going to be a sweep. But they're saying we are not done yet. It'll be a 24-second violation. Morris inbounds to Caruso. The Miami Heat, their title hopes are still alive. With one of the more surprising results in a finals game in a long, long time. An 11-point victory over...
Well, that was really when they managed to at least get a game back when everyone said it was going to be a total sweep. Where are we right now? The LA Lakers are still in the lead against the Miami Heat. It's 3-1 in the final series. Well, they've got an opportunity tonight to just grab it once and for all. LeBron James is looking for his fourth ring. Will he grab that? What will the Miami Heat have to say about all of this? And definitely we'll be keeping a close tabs on that with everything that happens, and we'll bring you analysis. Remember, the sports arena is on Sunday, and there'll be a lot to talk about when we get there. So much there to go through. I was telling you as well. So we look forward to the NBA. We'll see what happens in Game 5 between the Lakers and Miami Heat. I'm definitely sure the likes of LeBron James, Anthony Davis will be hoping to get the job done. What the likes of Jimmy Butler got in their banks. Let's see what they've got there. It's going to be absolutely tight, but if he ends up being the Lakers, then yeah, we'll go with the story, shall we? Let's get back into football right now, though. Just have to remind you again, if you're just missing things out in terms of updates and chasing the results in the various sports, in football, the friendly game between Ghana and Mali ended 3-0 against Ghana. Hans was here to do a bit of the analysis on that for us. Yeah, there's more to come on Fan Zone on the Joy News channel on Multi TV, and you want to pay some close attention to that. Michel Quino is here with me. He'll be quickly going through the rest of the friendlies that are ongoing, because we know at least in South America, I can tell you that the World Cup qualifiers are very much on. Argentina beat Ecuador, that was last night, and we're still going to see some coming from Colombia. So yeah, we're looking at the friendly games right now that are ongoing. Let's just have a look at it very, very quickly. The friendly games ongoing. Let's look at the friendly games ongoing very quickly. Just see what we've got. Okay, so Michelle, what have you got there?
So in the international friendlies, the game between Nigeria and Ivory Coast was cancelled, and Japan drew 0-0 Cameroon. And the match between Kenya and Zambia also looks to have been cancelled. Kenya beat Zambia by 2-1. Tunisia beat Sudan by 3-0. Burkina Faso also recorded a three-goal win margin over DR Congo. Gambia won 1-0 over Congo. Ghana lost, as we already know, to Mali by 3-0.
You need to remind us anyway. Yeah,
Mauritania beat Sierra Leone by 2-1. The game between Morocco and Senegal is currently in the 82nd minute. Morocco winning by 2-0. And Nigeria is losing by 1-0 to Algeria, and that game is currently in the 53rd minute.
It's important to note that all these games are just right there, the build-up for the special qualifiers that are going to be coming up later in the month. So we're going to keep our taps on that. In November, I must say, Ghana is going to be playing against Sudan, and you have to trust Joy Sports to get you all of that. So yes, let's get it out of the way. I was just trying to check again what's happening between Novak Djokovic there and Stefanos Tsitsipas. I told you he was 2 sets up. In the third set, it looked very much like the young man was coming so strong. He won the third set and really is rallying this into the fourth set. But can he win the fourth set? That's the big one to ask there. It's right now 4-4 in the fourth set. So Stefanos Tsitsipas is definitely on some run here. Let's see if he's able to finally break down Novak Djokovic. I remember Karina Busta complained so much about Novak Djokovic and all the antics about, you know, all the antics he gets into when he's about losing a game and all of that. But, you know, Novak says, when I'm not well, I'm not well. If I have to see my doctors, I'm going to see my doctors. If I need to take a medical break, I will take a medical break. Let's see how this one pans out. Rafa Nadal is waiting for the winner of Novak Djokovic versus Stefanos Tsitsipas. Now time, though, to get into more football and the Joy Sports BBC two-way series. I've been having a great chat there with the BBC's John Bennett. Enjoy this. Thanks, Sean, for your time this weekend. And there's no better place to begin than with a just-ended transfer window. So, Ghanaian perspective then, and Thomas Partey made the biggest move to Arsenal on transfer deadline day. How much will Partey help Arsenal in solving their problems?
Yeah, I think it's a terrific signing. I'm sure the Arsenal fans in Ghana are very, very excited. I mean, you guys know more about him than me, having watched him play more, I'm sure, for the Ghana national team. I've been lucky enough to see him play Africa Cup of Nations tournaments and for Atletico Madrid a couple of times, but you know, he's a wonderful player. He can dictate play from a kind of deep-lying midfield position, can't he? Long passes, short passes. He's able to carry the ball, though. He can surge forward with the ball. He can get around the pitch, wing to wing, box to box. Brilliant tackler, brilliant at intercepting the ball. Very versatile midfielder and a really good personality as well. You talk to his teammates, very confident guy, friendly guy, will settle in straight away to the Arsenal dressing room and apparently be one of the leaders as well. If you talk to some of his teammates, he's got that natural leadership ability as well. So I really feel that it's a brilliant addition to Arsenal. I was surprised. I thought they were going to miss out on Thomas Partey. I thought going into deadline day that they'd miss out on Hussein Aouar and Thomas Partey. In the end, they did miss out on the Lyon player, but they went for the Atletico Madrid player, and I think it means that Arsenal are a real force this season. I'm not saying title, but I'm saying top four is definitely a possibility for Arsenal this season.
John, what would your ideal Arsenal starting lineup be like if you were in Arteta's shoes, and with emphasis on who partners Thomas Partey in the midfield and why?
Well, I think it's a brilliant option. There's talk that he might go to 4-3-3 now, Mikel Arteta, to have Thomas Partey in a midfield, or maybe with Granit Xhaka, with Dani Ceballos. You could put him alongside Elneny as well to have a bit more solidity there. You could stick with a 3-4-3, have him alongside a Granit Xhaka or a Dani Ceballos. I think he just gives you so many options. He can play in a number of positions in midfield. We've seen him, haven't we, play for Ghana in a more advanced attacking midfield role. I think he is better deep lying because he's very intelligent. He can dictate the play. So it's just another option for Mikel Arteta, but I do feel he'll start. I think he's going to start if all goes well in the international break. He gets back fit and healthy. I think he'd start the first game if I was Mikel Arteta. Just throw him straight in there. I think he'll adapt straight away.
Manchester United had to react on transfer deadline day after losing 6-1 to Spurs at home. Their defence is in shambles. The team is looking like they need a shift. They need a lift badly in the last two Premier League games. Before we talk about the change expected from the new signings, John, is Ole getting the best out of his assembled squad?
That is a very interesting question, George. I think you phrased it really well there, because the thing about Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is he has a lot of friends in the media. You think about the pundits in the UK, the likes of Gary Neville, Paul Scholes sometimes pops up, Roy Keane even. They are friends with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer and they like him. So it's going to take a long time before Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's coaching is criticised. People talk about the board, and yes, they have made some huge errors in terms of the transfer strategy. I don't think they've done Ole Gunnar Solskjaer any favours whatsoever. How they've not brought in a centre-back, I just can't believe it. And there are other faults as well. You have to look at the players. I don't think some of the players are playing to the best of their ability. But at some point, we're going to have to see that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is not getting the best out of his players. At some point, you're going to have to look to his coaching. They had a brilliant end to last season. Listen, let me say that. They had a brilliant end to last season. I was there when they beat Leicester on the final day of the season to get into the top four. So that shows that he has an ability to do well with his team. But if the results keep on going badly, then I think the focus should come to him at some point. The trouble is, are you really solving the problem when you keep getting rid of managers, when you get rid of Moyes, when you get rid of Van Gaal, when you get rid of Mourinho, when you get rid of Ole Gunnar Solskjaer? At some point, you're going to have to realise that the problems run deeper. But I do think there are questions to be asked about Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's coaching, without a doubt.
So yes, former PSG striker Edinson Cavani, Brazilian Alex Telles and Diallo all signed on the final day for international transfers. What change will the trial bring to United?
Looking at the actual players, I think they're really good players. I think we can, you know, let's not... The two younger guys, I think they're for the future. I don't think they're going to have a massive impact just yet. One of them signing in January, isn't he? Edinson Cavani is a wonderful, wonderful player. Ultra competitive, brilliant goal scoring record. He's a team player. He defends from the front. The trouble is fitness issues and his age. He's 33. He hasn't played for 7 months. How fit is he going to be? How much time is he going to take to adapt to English football? But I do think, you know, he's a wonderful player. Why didn't they get him in earlier? That's the big question I would ask if they wanted him. Alex Telles, again, is a really good left back. Brilliant left foot. I wouldn't let him shoot from outside the box because he's got a rocket of a shot. And a decent defender as well. So you look at the actual players they brought in, they're not bad players. I think they could make a difference, but the transfer strategy is just bizarre at Manchester United. There doesn't seem to be any planning there.
Since his move to Southampton, John, we haven't seen Mohamed Salah to feature for the team. What more do you know with regards to his recuperation? And with the domestic transfer still open, what's next for Christian Atu?
On Salisu, the Southampton boss Ralf Hasenhüttl spoke about him this week. He said that he had been part of the first team training, but he's going to give him all the time he needs, is the quotation from Hasenhüttl. He arrived from Real Valladolid back in August, 4-year contract, but he's yet to make his debut. Continues to get up to speed with his new club. I think it's a bit of a fitness issue, a bit of a settling in issue as well, and Hasenhüttl saying it takes time. He's more and more part of our first team training. He's coming back. We'll give him all the time he needs. He made 32 appearances in all competitions in La Liga last season. So hopefully he gets a chance after the international break. On Christian Atsu, The interesting thing is that the deadline for clubs to sign players from abroad in England is over, but there's still the ability to sell players to clubs in the EFL, so the lower leagues in England. So Christian Atchou could drop down to the Championship before the deadline day next Friday. Watford are being talked about possibly as a team that he could join. So there's still a chance that Christian Atchou could get out of Newcastle. I think he needs to leave to get first team football. Steve Bruce is treating him very well, the Newcastle manager. He's looking after him. He's not forcing him to play with the youth team or train with the youth team. But for I think for his own career, Christian Atchou should be looking maybe to drop down to the Championship, take a step back, to possibly take a step, two steps forward in a year or so.
So, John, the country club row has been interesting to watch, with clubs coming up with so many excuses to prevent the players from travelling outside the bubble for international games or friendly games. How complicated does this get? And is there any way of taking care of the concerns of the clubs?
It's really tricky, George. We talked about this on our programme. I spoke to the Secretary General of FIFPro earlier this week on one of our BBC programmes. And he was saying there's going to be a bit of trouble when the players go back to their clubs at the end of this international break. Say you arrive back on a Thursday, you have to play on a Saturday. You're going to have a test when you leave your international team, and then you're going to have a test when you arrive at your club. Will they get the results back quick enough? How many are going to test positive? It could lead to chaos, and we've already seen it with Kieran Tierney. Kieran Tierney was with the Scotland squad, the Arsenal defender, remember. Stuart Armstrong, the Scotland player, tested positive. And Kieran Tierney was playing PlayStation with Stuart Armstrong, so he was identified as a close contact. So that means he has to self-isolate for 14 days. So as it stands at the moment, he's set to miss Arsenal's game against Manchester City. So having these international matches during this pandemic is going to cause a huge amount of problems.
That aside, Ghana just ended a friendly against Mali. Which friendly games and special European games are you looking forward to this weekend?
Yeah, good luck to Ghana. Great to see the Black Stars back in action. I've really missed seeing the African teams playing. So good luck to Ghana today. That'll be an interesting game. The games I'm looking forward to this weekend are the UEFA Nations League games. The UEFA Nations League is not a glamorous competition, but you've got some quite heavyweight clashes. Let's start in Germany and Spain's group. Germany playing Ukraine. They haven't picked up a victory yet in the Nations League this season, Germany. The likes of Neuer, Kroos, Kimmich, Werner and Gnabry coming back. Spain, they're looking to make it back-to-back wins when they play Switzerland. Ansu Fati, the wonder kid from Barcelona, should start. You've got England playing Belgium on Sunday as well. Harry Kane should start after being rested for the win against Wales, the friendly win on Thursday. You've got the repeat of the Euro 2016 final, France taking on Portugal in Nations League A Group 3. Portugal and France have a 100% record so far. And you've got other interesting games like Poland against Italy, Bosnia-Herzegovina against the Netherlands, who of course have a new head coach. So for me, the games I'll be watching this weekend will be the Nations League games.
All right, the BBC's John Bennett there, the Joy Sports BBC two-way series. And yes, definitely so much there, you know, to watch. And it's good stuff. Okay, so we've got some great games to go right through it. I was just trying to get some of the updates coming in, and I was just telling you about it again. Stefanos Tsitsipas right now leading 5-4 in the fourth set. It's Novak Djokovic who has 2 sets already to the one of Stefanos Tsitsipas. So that's what we've got for you. Just about time to say bye-bye to you. Our time is up now. But I was going to remind you of what we've got for you this weekend. So can we start with the Fun Zone later tonight on Joy News? We'll be talking a lot more about the Ghana 0, Mali 3. Tomorrow morning, we've got the Sports Review on the Joy News channel. You need to join us from 7 a.m. till 8:30. We're talking, you know, heavy sports. And then later on Saturday, we've got the Sports Link here on radio. And Saniel will be over it. Heavy issues discussing the Black Stars and, you know, issues with transfers and all that we've seen, how much we're managing, you know, the transition of our players. We'll talk about that. Then later in the evening on Saturday, we've got scoreboard for you, and you need to watch out again. All the results at the end of the weekend, of course, on Saturday, it will be there for you on scoreboard. On Sunday, we have the Sports Arena Gary Alsmit will be here with the team to take you through all that we've got. But remember, on Sunday, we start at 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. My name is George Adejune. It's been a pleasure doing the show with Michelle Quino, with Hans Mensah, and the entire Joy Sports team powering this and ensuring that we came your way with all that we needed to. I must tell you, it's going to be difficult for Novak Djokovic. Just when I turned, it looks like Stefanos Tsitsipas is taking the fourth set. We are going right into a fifth set at the moment to decide who will play against Rafa Nadal. Yeah, you can find a good place to watch this. It's really, really great. It's just about time to step out right now. And it's almost started, yes? Okay, so we'll see how it all goes. My name is George.